Hello and welcome to another episode of Consumer, the European podcast of the Consumer Choice Center. As always, I'm your host, Bill Wirtz. On this June 13, 2024, you're listening to episode 161, and I'm coming to you live from Brussels, Belgium, the heart, the capital of the European Union. On this week's episode, of course, we are talking about the European elections. I'm having Peter Klepper on. He's the editor-in-chief of Brussels Report to break down the results at the European elections last week and what consequences we'll have from those elections, both in policy but also the politicking of it all, with a new European Commission having to be assembled by, I would say, roughly September. I think sort of that's the idea, depending on how long the European Council will take. So you'll hear the entire exchange with Peter at the end of this episode. But first, let's go through some news. First up, online retailers fined for offering fake discounts in the Netherlands. This is a story from DutchNews.nl. The Dutch Consumer Authority, ACM, has fined five online stores a total of €621,000 for offering fake discounts and misleading consumers into thinking they were getting a better deal than they were indeed getting. The web shops offered multiple products with discounts on misleading was prices, but in reality the discount was lower or none was offered at all, the ACM said. What is interesting here is that according to the rules in the Netherlands, it needs to be a better price compared to the last 30 days. So for instance, by law, this means that one of the companies had violated the rules because they offered a product on discount from 699 down to €629, even though the previous price within a 30-day time frame had been 539. So some of those companies have acknowledged that they were indeed at fault. It includes fashion retailer G-Star, which was fined €110,000. Also Danish furniture retailer Jysk and Tommy Hilfiger's online shop in the Netherlands were also fined €105,500. Day Traders is one of the big ones, and furniture retailer Lean Bucker will also fined for similar practices. And I think this comes back to a lot of the things that we've seen happening with online retailer Temu from China, which has similar practices where they are not really honest about the fact whether it is a discount or not. And to me, ultimately, that is what a competition authority is all about, because we are really talking about deceptive advertising here. And I'm not sure if a €100,000 fine is going to do much there, but at least it's an indicator that false advertising is being cracked down on, and where consumers are definitely misled by those websites. Of course, as a consumer, it always makes sense to use online comparison portals on the best price across different platforms. But of course, consumers are also loyal to specific brands or specific brands that only offer through their own channels. So it certainly makes sense to always compare the prices before you think you've gotten a better deal than you actually may have gotten. Next up, we have a Swiss Parliament, which is not happy about a European Court of Human Rights decision out of Strasbourg. Some of you may remember this, that the European Court of Human Rights had decided that the Swiss government was not doing enough against climate change. And this is Politico writing, Swiss Parliament spurns European climate ruling. Both chambers accuse the ECHR of judicial activism. The Swiss Parliament on Wednesday voted to snub a ruling by the European Court of Human Rights that accused the country of being ineffective in fighting climate change. In a statement, the Parliament's lower chamber said the ECHR had, quote, exceeded the limits of permissible legal development and disregarded Switzerland's democratic decision-making process, end of quote. The motion was adopted by a margin of 111 votes to 72 with 10 abstentions. Some lawmakers accused the European Court of violating the separation of powers. And that was one of my big quibbles here with the decision out of Strasbourg, is that you know, if there's a specific violation of law, then yes, the court is certainly in its power to react. And if there's a specific violation of course the convention that the ECHR is supposed to govern. But this is not really the case here at all. This is really a case of judicial activism because it's a grander political case. It gets a bit more complicated when a government has constitutional provisions that says that it's doing its utmost to protect the climate, then it gets a bit more muddy in the waters. But I don't think Switzerland has that in its constitution, even though that constitution has been unfortunately reviewed quite a few times in Switzerland. But ultimately, it's very inconcrete because many of those things haven't really put numbers on it, and it's hard to measure to what extent a government is supposed to put action on that, and also which action is actually effective. And that is something that court will have a really hard time deciding on, and that's why these type of ECHR decisions really don't help the seriousness of the court, and it doesn't really help citizens really understand what the democratic process should be here. We don't want those judges to make decisions. If you want different people, you can vote different people in, and that is a great segue to the next story. Our guest this week is Peter Klepper. He's the editor-in-chief at Brussels Report, and we had him back on to discuss all things European elections, including the Belgian parliamentary elections, because Peter is Belgian after all. So we had an interesting back and forth there about the election results and if we can say anything conclusive about them. So take it away. So we got Peter Klepper, editor-in-chief at Brussels Report, back on the line to talk about the European elections. Some of you will remember him because we talked in the run-up to this election, about what we can expect from the incoming European Parliament and the big files that we'll have to address. But let's talk about this election. Peter, let's start off with this. If I'm looking at the charts and all the different seat distributions of the different European parties, to the uninformed observer, if they open it, it looks all a bit complicated. Can we say anything reliable in general when we have such a diverse field of 27 member countries? Can we say anything reliably politically about this election?
Well, yeah, let's maybe start with the most fun result, which is the massive losses of the Greens. Apart from Denmark, where they have come first for some reason, don't ask me why, but in pretty much every European member states, they have been punished by voters. I would say because they're actually not all that green, they don't really seem to be all that preoccupied by the environment. For example, when it comes to CO2, they are, unconditionally, almost all of them, against nuclear power. So that's kind of weird. If you say, oh, CO2 emission is very bad and dangerous and they're alarmist and hysteric sometimes, then at least when you have an energy source that is, perfectly capable of fixing the problem, you would expect them to embrace that energy source, and they do not do that. They instead embrace degrowth. They propose a ban on the combustion engine, cars with a combustion engine, forcing people to buy expensive and until now not very convenient electric vehicles. Maybe in the future that will change. They pass legislation whereby they impose on people to renovate their homes, even if it's not financially profitable for people. They claim that's for the climate. So all of this, I think people have enough. They say, look, sorry, but this is not green. This is, paternalistic, authoritarianism, really repackaged in a green, present, so to speak. So the Greens have been hammered, and let's hope that this will have an effect, that policymakers will reconsider some of the worst excesses, at least, of the European Green Deal, which is so broad. And then, of course, you have, secondly, the big topic of the rising support for the populist right, ranging from relatively modest center-right to pretty unsavory, forces sometimes, and everything in between. I would say the most important result is in France, where Jordan Bardella, the lead candidate of Le Pen's national rally, came first, obtained at least twice as much votes as the candidate of Macron, who is not a centrist, who is fanatically green herself. So that sort of tells you everything you need to know, because the story here is that the center-right and the centrist have abandoned their voters, and voters have then moved to more extreme forces. In the case of France, these extreme forces have moderated. Bardella, I think you could say, is more moderate, is more broad than Le Pen. Some people say he may even challenge his political mother for the presidency. Very interesting. Macron, in response to his massive defeat, called a parliamentary election, which will already take place this month, at the end of this month. And this is very important because at the end of this month, you also have a European summit where European leaders will or were planning to nominate the next president of the European Commission. Now, Ursula von der Leyen has really been a hate figure in the French election campaign, for the same reason that I mentioned, because she was very supportive of all these extreme Green Deal policies. It's now come out that when they were proposed by the Dutch climate commissioner, Timmermans, all the European commissioners were actually very hostile, but still von der Leyen supported Timmermans and he could go forward with his green extreme plans. And as a result, you had massive farmer protests, but also industry in the Benelux, in Germany, very, very critical to the European Green Deal. So the EU really has lost connection with the mainstream there. Von der Leyen is responsible. I think it's going to be very difficult for the French president to support her for a second term, even if you look at the election results, her so-called coalition, the EPP, SND, and Renew, they have around 400 seats. You need like 360 for a majority, but the problem is this vote is secretive, so you need like 10-15% extra. So maybe with the help of the Italian prime minister, you know, right-wing populist, but ultra-opportunist, Giorgia Meloni, then, you know, von der Leyen could get in. I mean, let's not forget 5 years ago, she already was elected thanks to Orban and the Polish PiS party, so nothing would be new. But of course, the precondition is she would need to get the support of the, you know, government leaders of Europe and certainly of the French president. And I think it's going to be very difficult for Macron to support her.
And then who would be who could be a consensus candidate there? Because I mean, I remember Ursula von der Leyen just by virtue of being fluent in French, very francophile in general, being an excellent candidate last time around, got the support of Macron. Merkel had to make some phone calls to PIS and in Poland to get that over the line, and she was confirmed in the end. But it's not obvious to me who would be a good consensus candidate that reflects a decline in environmentalist support, a rise in more nationalist, populist right support, but then also satisfies all the different EU council members, while at the same time recognizing that even though we have shifts in declines in Greens and rise of the right in some countries, that's not even true in other countries. I don't really even see a person that would represent all of those things with all the challenges that are in front of the EU. Do you see anyone that could potentially replace Ursula von der Leyen at the head of the European Commission?
Well, in theory, I would say it's easy. You need, like, ideally, a former government leader, not some failed defense minister like von der Leyen. That was such a mistake. It's the parting gift of Angela Merkel also to Europe, but supported by Macron at the time because he wanted to get Christine Lagarde as ECB president. Ideally, of a small country, you know, because government leaders of big countries are not interested to start lead the European Commission. And somebody center right, you know, not some extremist in any way, somebody who's generally center right, meaning somebody unlike Ursula von der Leyen, who is coming from a nominally center right party, but who has been obviously left green for everybody to see. So, can you come up with, you know, are there people like that? I'm sure you can think of people. Mark Rutte seems to be on his way to NATO, but why not a Central and Eastern European politician? There should be quite a few people to pick from. I don't think Donald Tusk would be interested, but if he would, that would not be bad. The current Czech Prime Minister, for example, Mr. Fiala, he would be good. Of course, he's ECR, so ideally you need like somebody normally from the EPP, I guess. But you know, it can be somebody that has not had a top job for a few years already, right? So, however, that's in theory. In practice, it's different. In practice, Mr. Macron has been behind the scenes already supporting Mario Draghi, who's nominally center right. But just like Ursula von der Leyen, he is anything but center right. I mean, as European Central Bank president, his whatever it takes policy, extreme money printing has been the key reason why countries not only like Italy but also Belgium have not undertaken a single competitiveness reform. Yeah? The money was secure, the financing of the state was secure because of the cheap monetary policies at the expense of savers. This is one of the reasons why we have so little innovation in Europe as compared to United States, China. If you look at AI, for example, combined with energy experiments, which are undermining our industrial competitiveness, especially the in energy intensive industry. So, Draghi is very much the face of the zombification of the European economy. But he's a centralist, and he's a centralist just like Emmanuel Macron. That's why Macron is supporting him. I think it may fly because I could see Draghi being supported by Meloni, if only because he's Italian. You know, that's how it works. The German government is very much on the left, so they wouldn't, and they're also centralists at heart, so they would also support him. Maybe the FDP would make trouble over him, but then, as always, the FDP, always loses in pretty much everything they undertake. I would like it to be different. So Draghi is less of a hate figure, or not a hate figure at all, as far as I know, in French politics. So the stars may be well aligned for him.
Yeah. Well, that's it's certainly going to be interesting, and then also some of the commission top jobs that, and it seems that every 5 years it seems to shift around which one is very desirable. I don't think enlargement was a portfolio as important as it is this time when conversations about not just countries in the Western Balkans joining, but also specifically the conversation about Ukraine being an important one. Agriculture is going to be a very important portfolio. So. Countries really trying to line up their candidates there to put in those positions. Some governments, I know the Luxembourgish government has already said who they're going to nominate for commissioner, no matter what the portfolio. So that's going to be one of those things that already are being lined up. I wanted to briefly touch before we get back to the European elections. I do want to touch on the Belgium elections because this is also something that we did briefly talk about, Peter, because. Belgium had parliamentary elections, and there's been some changes there. Can you just sort of briefly outline? I think some people probably got the push notification that Prime Minister De Croo has resigned, given his pretty crushing defeat there in Belgium. What does it look like now with Belgian politics being so fragmented overall? What does the landscape look like right now in Belgian domestic politics?
So Belgium had both federal and regional elections. The Belgian federal government was composed of seven political parties. The prime minister was only coming from the fifth biggest political party of the country, the nominally center-right liberals from Flanders. Now, in practice, this government has been conducting quite left-wing policies, not engaging in almost any competitiveness reform. They came up with a pension reform that made the Belgian pension system even more unsustainable than it already was. As a result of this, Belgium was not going to get, I think, at least 1 billion of European Recovery Fund money, cash that they would have to, pay back for anyway. Also, when it comes to migration, there was a lot of migration chaos in Belgium. So the voters had enough, and as expected, in Flanders, in the north, which is typically more right-wing, the Vlaams Belang, which is sort of the far-right, right-wing populist party, they made headway, 2 or 3%, but a lot less than the opinion polls had predicted. The biggest party remained the center-right Flemish nationalist of the N-VA, led by Bart De Wever, who is, I would say, a very, very solid liberal conservative. Enormously strong debater. Everybody agrees that thanks to his enormous debating skills, he turned the corner for his party, which was heading for a pretty bad defeat. Everybody, including me, was thinking. That was actually very very welcome and surprising. However, even more interesting was that in the south of Belgium, the Francophone part, which tends to, let's say, be more center-left or even far-left, many people had expected a big victory of the communist, the PTB, the Parti Travailleur Belge. Now, what happened is that they lost. And the center-right liberals, they became the big winners in both Brussels and Wallonia, which is the south, the Francophone south of Belgium, together with the more centrist Christian Democrats, or at least they have a different name now, Les Engagés, but it's like the successor party of the old Christian Democrats, meaning that they can form a government without the Francophone socialists. Which are, I would say, one of the most left-wing, unreformed, socialist, clientelist, socialist parties of Europe. If you go to cities like Liège and Charleroi, the level of wealth is only similar to, the Budapest region. This used to be the second industrialized part of the world after England, after Manchester and Birmingham. But unlike these cities in the UK, which are still struggling, of course, to a degree, there has been virtually no reconversion economically in Liège and Charleroi, and this has been largely because of the money that Belgian politicians have been throwing at it. So many people are basically paid to be unemployed. Belgium is one of the only country, if not the only country in the world, where you can be unemployed forever. We have situations where three generations of people are unemployed. And interestingly, Georges-Louis Boucher, who is the leader of the Francophone liberals, he is coming from a region himself. His whole street was unemployed. Everybody was voting for the Socialist Party. So this is a historic win for what I would say is a very courageous politician, Georges-Louis Boucher. To be fair, he also his party was also in the current left-wing federal government that was punished by voters. But even then, he tried to really hold the fort, for example, when everybody had already given up on nuclear energy. There was a concession to the Greens to shut down Belgium's seven perfectly functional nuclear reactors. Boucher kept on fighting against his decision. And then, when Putin invaded Ukraine, finally some sense returned to the Belgian federal government to keep at least a few of these reactors open. Very funny to see the Greens, especially in Francophone Belgium, were completely hammered. The party presidents were not re-elected. The Green Deputy Federal Prime Minister, Mr. Gilles Quinet, was not re-elected. It was really a fuera all the way in Belgium, and that's great. That's great to see. I'm quite hopeful that we will see an imperfect government, a new federal government, but that will finally bring some sense, because the federal budget is really problematic. The European Commission is going to be criticizing Belgium. Yeah, there's hope again.
Yeah, so that's definitely an interesting analysis there. And let's for the last part, as we're running out of time here, let us return to the other part of Brussels again, to the European institutions. And there will be a new composition of the European Parliament now after this election. A lot of freshmen, a lot of new people in Brussels trying it out and figuring out the European institutions. Ultimately, you could look at the results and say, "Well, I mean, the coalition of the center has remained okay. The Greens were never part of that in the first place, and we'll have some more right wingers. But ultimately, nothing has fundamentally changed. If you look at the sea changes between the European People's Party and the Socialists and Democrats, not fundamentally different numbers. I mean, there will be some recomposing with some of the groups. Some people are going to join one group instead of the other. So we'll see how that develops. But ultimately," you could say, I mean, if whoever comes to the European Commission as president could say, "Well, I mean, we're just going to do business as usual because we have the votes." Is that what you expect, or will a lot of this also be conditional on other elections, including the one that we're going to be seeing in France starting at the end of the month? Do you think there will really be a fundamental shift, or is it going to be another 5 years of maybe a bit less activity, but ultimately more of the same, with ideas of maybe going to rename the European Green Deal? It's going to be something else, but ultimately the same ambitions. Or do you think there's a fundamental paradigm shift in EU politics?
I do think we have seen a shift to the right. It is wrong to say that there's a permanent coalition. There are constant changing coalitions in the European Parliament, all dependent on the legislative file. Very often, these European political groups are divided. The big coalition, EPP, SND, and Renew, they will likely also be the coalition to seal the fate and to support the new commission president. But again, likely there will be, especially if Draghi is the candidate, there will be some right-wing populists, being invited to support in order to be sure that there's no accidents, because it's a secret vote. This ha already happened a lot 5 years ago. So with Orban and Polish PiS government party voting for von der Leyen to get into power then. It's hard to believe now, but nothing new really. But this is just a one-off. I remember when the EPP was finally changing its mind on supporting all the Green Deal legislation, and they were, voting against the nature restoration law, a new piece of environmental legislation coming from the EU. Then the EPP was split, basically. And that's what you see. So, but in a nutshell, because you have more center-right and populist right weight in the European Parliament, they will also be more involved into these compromises, into these temporary coalitions.
All right. Well, that's it's certainly going to be interesting to see, and I'm going to have you back to talk about some of those movements, because especially a lot of people are underestimating that while they may have voted, coalitions and different groups and decision making is going to be made in Brussels far later than the actual elections. Like, who's part of which group, who's going to be supporting who for different committees and commission posts. That internal political game is only just starting. Most likely, the most important part of which after the summer breaks, when a lot of those people will have to make those decisions. So in any case, Peter Kleppe, thank you so much for joining the Consumer Podcast. People can find you on brusselsreport.eu. Is that the correct domain there?
Yes.
brusselsreport.eu. Fantastic. You can find it on X and all of the other social media platforms as well. So do go check that out. Thank you so much, Peter.
Thank you, Bill.
And that's all we have for you today. today. Thank you so much for listening. I already lined out where you can follow Peter Klepper online, so do that, and follow Consumer Choice Center as well at Consumer Choice C on X, or you can find us on Instagram as well if you're more of an Instagram person. So please go do that, and I will be back on Thursday.